on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we are live here at SEC Media Days 2024, day three here on Radio Row in Dallas, Texas. I'm Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7. It's you and me for the next 2 hours on the Auburn Opelika Sports later on this Wednesday, July 17th, 2024. Well, day three at SEC Media Days is always a busy one. It's Alabama Day today, and it's not Nick Saban. Yes, it's Kalen DeBoer who took the main stage podium this morning. Also, going live in about 20 minutes in the main room across from me, it will be Sark. Yes, Steve Sarkisian, the head coach of Texas, will be taking the main stage. So really looking forward to what he has to say today. And also heard from Jeff Lebby from Mississippi State and Billy Napier from Florida. So we're going to recap all of that here on the show today. Thanks too much to Doug for getting us started from 11 to 2. You got me from 2 to 4, and then you'll have Dan from 4 to 6. Here's what the guest lineup looks like today. It's been jam-packed all week. It will continue to be that here today. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, our normal Wednesday guest at 2:30. So instead of having him over the phone, we're going to have him live in person with us here on Radio Row. So looking forward to talking to Jordan about Georgia Day yesterday and kind of looking ahead to the season for the Dogs. We also have Ty Richardson, buddy of mine at ESPN Arkansas, hopped on with them this morning on his show Hit That Line, and he'll be joining us at 3 o'clock. We'll talk Auburn, we'll talk Arkansas, talk about that game coming up in Week 4. And then Chris Doering from the SEC Network will join us at 3:30. That's coming up in hour number 2. Chris Doering from the SEC Network. Had a chance to catch up with him earlier today, and so we'll have that for you in the second hour as well. Trey Wallace from Outkick is going to be with us at some point. He's running around here, so we just got to snag him when he comes through, and we'll make sure he sits down and talks to us for a few minutes. So lots of great guests today, great stuff to get into, and you can always shoot me a text to get into me, 334-784-1067. That's the best way to do it right now with us being in Dallas. You can send me a text again, 334-784-1067. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Ben Taylor back in the ESPN 106.7 studio. Appreciate him being there all week long, making sure we get on the air and everything goes according to plan. All of our SEC Media Days coverage here in 2024 in Dallas is brought to you by all of our fantastic sponsors that made this possible. The Orthopedic Clinic, Plaza Bar and Lounge, Roots Real Estate, State Farm Insurance Agent Callie Bryan Chaddock, Wisdom Law Firm, and University Ace Hardware. So thank you so much to them for, again, making this possible and allowing us to make this trip out to Dallas and bring you some great coverage. I know Doug and Gavin had DeBoer on for a little bit. They had Jalen Milroe for a second. So they got a lot of good Alabama coverage. And Auburn is coming up. I promise Auburn is tomorrow, okay? Auburn and Hugh Freeze will be here in Dallas tomorrow for SEC Media Days. We're going to do our best to try to get a combination of those guys between Freeze, Asante, Thorne, and Falk. We're going to try and get them on here, okay? I can't make any promises, can't make any guarantees, but we're going to do what we can to get those guys on. So looking forward to that tomorrow. Well, today was a big day, and it's still going. And look, I see everybody flooding into the main media room because, as I told you, Sark is going on in about 15 minutes. And it was a big day yesterday when Venables took the podium. And I expect it to be even bigger today when Sark takes the podium because they're the newcomers, right? They're the new guys in town that are trying to establish themselves in this new conference. And with Texas, I mean, they are, other than Georgia, I'd say they're the second in betting favorite to get to the SEC championship game and also make the college football playoff. And I think that's what they should expect. I think that's what they will probably end up doing. That's a really talented team. You've got Quinn Ewers coming back, who is here somewhere today. Haven't seen him yet. I don't think they've made their passes through Radio Row. But that's a team in Texas that they finally have gotten to where they want, and now it's time for them to take advantage. And especially now with the expanded college football playoff, even with the four, I mean, they made it, right? And it's a team that has been there, and they know what it takes. Now they're trying to take that next step and become a national champion again. So really looking forward to hearing what Sark has to say in the main media room. DeBoer went this morning. We're going to get into that in just a second from Alabama, because I have some thoughts on that as well. Billy Napier is always one that intrigues me from Florida, because, look, I like the guy. I really do. I like Billy Napier. I think he's a good coach, and I think he's a good dude. I mean, a guy that was quoting scripture in his main media room appearance. Like, that's something that I can get behind and back up. But I just can't understand why he – what's the best way to say this? He stepped into such a difficult job, man. He just took over a program that was in shambles, and it's only, I'm not going to say gotten worse, but the situation has not gotten any easier. Does that make any sense, right? He's a guy that was such a good coach. He stepped into a Florida program that desperately needed help, and he just hasn't been able to do it. And I think a little bit of that is on him, sure, and his coaching staff, but also think it's just such a hard spot to be right now at the University of Florida. Now, they've got all the resources you could ever want, right? They've got more money than most. They've got all the facilities. They've got all the boosters. They've got all the support. They've got everything. The Florida Athletic Department is one of the best in the entire country. But with Billy Napier, it just hasn't gotten to where it needed to be just yet. And so I don't know if he's going to be able to make it happen. I really, really don't. And I hope he does. I hope that they go out and prove the doubters wrong this year with Florida. I think their win total was like 4.5 or something like that. And I just, with that schedule, yeah, it seems about impossible. Well, here at SEC Media Days, I tell you this all the time. You got to call an audible once or twice, and you never know who's going to sit down and step into the table. And putting the headset on right now, Spencer McLaughlin, a guy that I've met here at SEC Media Days. You can catch him on the Locked On Podcast Network, host of Locked On Ducks for Oregon, and recently host of the Locked On College Football Show. What's up, man? How are you?
Oh, dude, so good, so good. The buzz kind of started slow today, even though Kalen DeBoer was the first coach to take the stage. I think the energy took a little while to pick up. Perhaps people were shaking off the rust from the open bar event that we went to last night.
Like, people are hurting more than others. Yeah, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, but I kind of got that sense a little bit, but no, man, it's been a blast. It's my first SEC Media Days, and it's been fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, you're a guy coming from the Pac-12 and the RIP, right?
RIP indeed. RIP indeed.
The Pac-2 now, and Oregon moving into the Big Ten. We'll talk about that in just a second. But yeah, what do you think about all this at SEC Media Days? You're here representing the Locked On College Football Show, correct?
Yeah, I am, and I mean, I think it's great. You know, the number of people that want to cover the SEC is, I think, indicative of what the national narrative is around this conference, which is it is the best conference in America, and it's the one that everybody, you know, wants to be a part of or wants to cover. And you just come here, you understand why. Like, the buzz is so palpable, and I'll be at Big Ten Media Days next week in Indianapolis, and I'm...
Have you been to that one before?
I have not, and I'm more than a little curious to see how it compares and kind of what the feel is. I mean, because the excitement and the energy and the juice from, you know, different tables like this one and shows like this all up and down, you feel it when you just walk up and down Radio Row. Mm-hmm. And I think you get that sense in a really, really strong, palpable way. And I think it's, you know, a really concrete reminder that the season's so close.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, really close. We're going to have, I think, about five weeks from now, we're going to have a college football game.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Florida State plays Georgia Tech over in Ireland. That game's August 24th.
Wow. I mean, that's the week zero game.
That's the big week zero game. So, you know, week zero is usually a tease, and that one might be Florida State could blow them out. But Georgia Tech's an interesting team in the ACC. They could pull an upset here or there. I don't expect them to win that particular game, but I like what Brent Key is doing down there in Atlanta. So, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of stuff just fires me up. You know, I've talked about the the season, big games and players and movements, all this sort of stuff, and new coaches and pressure. And, you know, it's fun to continue talking about all that, but there's nothing like when you're in the game, when you're in the season, and right. games are happening. There's nothing like it, and I can't wait.
Well, we're getting so close, and of course, SEC Media Day is considered the unofficial kickoff to the college football season. Right. Billy Napier was talking this morning about how they've got like 10 days left in the workout period, and then fall practice starts. I mean, they're that close, right? It's literally right around the corner. And anything that you have heard this week or seen this week or talked with other people about, whether it be coaches or players, anything that's really got you kind of questioning or caught your ear a little bit so far at SEC Media Day, Spencer?
I mean, nothing that's jumped out, you know, wildly. I will say I talk plenty of realignment on my show because it just never seems to go away.
And it never will.
No, yeah. and I don't know that it ever will. And, you know, I've had people ask me about that before, like, oh, when do you think it fades? I'm like, I don't know. I can give you a timeline of how it's at least going to run into 2026, mm-hmm. at least.
Yeah.
At least, and then beyond that, you just never know. So it's nice to be here and have everything be about the football. You know, there were a couple early questions, and like I asked one because I wanted to know to Commissioner Greg Sankey about, you know, realignment. Where does the SEC stand? And he gave kind of a non-answer, but one that leaves the door open for them to try to get Florida State and Clemson if they decide that, you know, it's the right move at the right price and the right time and everything. But, you know, his line was, we are 16 strong. We are 16 today. We are 16 tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's tomorrow? Like, literally tomorrow or just this week? Like, it leaves everything very open-ended, right? But other than that, it's been all about the football and talking to players and coaches and insights and talking games and matchups and new traditions and rivalries that, you know, could form with Texas and Oklahoma. That certainly, I think, is adding to the buzz because we're in Dallas. We're in Dallas, you know, and I mean, Steve Sarkisian is going to be up at the podium and in about 10 minutes. I'm going to head over there once we wrap the segment up that, you know, came about in the time that I walked by the table and pointed to a headset. Said, you wanna,
that's how Media Days works, man. You got to be ready to go.
Yeah, you're just ready to go at all times. But, you know, there have been questions asked almost every single coach by a Texas media member about Texas specifically. And, you know, there have been a couple about Oklahoma as well. I don't think that's non-existent. But that Texas element is... It's different.
It is. And they've got people
different.
Everywhere
yes,
here this
they do.
Week.
Oh,
between
they,
radio, journalists, photographers, doesn't matter, man. Yeah. Texas people are everywhere
this
week.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, what they have made very clear is they don't have a low opinion of themselves going into the SEC. They're not worried about, are they going to contend? Mm-hmm. They're asking others, are you ready for Texas and what Texas brings to the table? And, you know, they had a great season a year ago, but the prior years would make you think Texas should have just a little bit more of a concern about, hey, how do we match up against the best in the SEC?
Well, I mean, I've said it to open up the show. They're the second betting favorite to make or to win the SEC and to make the college football playoff out of the SEC behind Georgia. I mean, Nick Saban picked Georgia and Texas to be in the SEC championship game today.
Like, yeah, I taped tomorrow's episode of Locked On College Football and talked about that. I think he avoided picking Alabama because of how it would look. Like, I know Nick Saban's been in the public eye for a long time. He's taken flack and criticism. He had a funny exchange with Paul Feinbaum early. He's had a couple of funny exchanges.
Yeah,
I think Saban as a pundit is a 15 out of 10. I think he is so good.
Yeah.
And I think the way that he approaches it, his mentality, I think is really good. And, you know, there was something when he was asked about Paul Feinbaum, said, you know, what do you think about Feinbaum saying that you coming and being a pundit is trying to ruin his career? And he goes, well, he spent 17 years trying to ruin mine, so I'd say we're all square.
Saban just seems so more relaxed and just seems like he's, I don't know, enjoying himself and having a good time. He's not stressed and has all the stuff weighing down about being a head coach.
Well, you know, Ross Ellinger tweeted that he had he'd said he plays golf almost every morning, and by the ninth hole, Miss Terry texts him and starts giving him to-do lists. It's like, you got to do this, and he responds, like, can I just finish my round first?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what he's doing, which, you know, when I retire, I don't know if I'll ever retire one day. I mean,
in this business, do you ever really retire?
Yeah, I don't know if you ever really retire, but, you know, if I get to that point in my life, I'd probably wake up and play golf every day as well. But I back to the Alabama point, I don't think in his first year as a pundit being on ESPN, which, you know, gets plenty of accusations, sometimes justifiably, for being too pro-SEC and whatnot, him going out there and saying Alabama's going to make the conference championship game, he might have just not wanted to stir anything like that up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, something that I was reminded of and continues to amaze me every time I hear it is Kalen DeBoer takes the stage and he's being introduced by Greg Sankey, who mentions his all-time coaching record.
Which is insane.
He has coached, as a head coach, 116 football games, and he's lost 12. He's lost 12.
People forget that.
Oddly enough, one of them is to a 3-9 Arizona State team led by interim head coach Sean Aguano, who's now a running backs coach with the Sun
Devils. How about that?
But that's the last Pac-12 team to beat Washington and Kalen DeBoer. So, you know, the DeBoer factor, I can't get over it because, you know, they had some real departures and talent losses when he first got there, but he's replenished. I mean, he is replenished.
And he's a hell of
really
a coach.
Well. He is a heck of a football coach.
Like, and the guy wins.
And he's got a quarterback who I think he's going to get the most out of in Jalen Milroe. He's got weapons. He's got an offensive line that has an incredibly talented young center in Parker Brailsford, who I voted for as a preseason All-SEC team on my ballot earlier this week. And then you have Caden Proctor. You know, think whatever you want of the situation. The reality is that guy was the number one offensive tackle in his class, and he's going to be a true sophomore and was, you know, pretty good for Alabama last year. And I think making that sophomore leap is a very real thing. You look at the receivers they've got, and they've got a bunch of dudes. Like, they lost guys. They lose Isaiah Bond. They lose Jermaine Burton. But then you look up and you go, wait, they got Ryan Williams coming in. Yeah, he's going to come in. Oh, Jeremy Bernard, that's a guy.
Yeah.
Jeremy Bernard's a guy, and he was the number four on Washington's receiving corps last year. There's no shame in that. All those three guys just got drafted.
They just went pro. Yep.
In the first three rounds of the NFL draft. So, I think Georgia and Alabama have a really, really, they both have a really good chance to get there. Could come down to individual matchups and, you know, like the head-to-head matchups. Mm-hmm. And I like Georgia's roster more than Texas, but I like Texas's schedule more than Georgia's. Georgia has to go at Bama, at Texas, at Ole Miss. Even for Georgia, that's asking a lot to win all three of those games. But if they win that game at Texas, I think they're locked to the SEC title game.
Let me ask you this, and we're speaking with Spencer McLaughlin, host of Locked On College Football, here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. How many teams – it's a two-parter, and I hate doing this. It's my biggest pet peeve as a journalist person. But how many teams can make the college football playoff from the SEC, and how many teams will make the playoff from the SEC?
Four is the number for will. Five is the number for can. Three is the minimum.
Okay.
The two teams that get into the SEC title game, I think, will both have one or zero losses, and those two teams will both be in. And then whoever goes 10-2 but misses the SEC title game, like, let's say, you know,
Ole Miss.
Yeah, let's say Ole Miss loses to Georgia and they play Bama, I think, as well. Let's say they lose to Georgia and they lose to Bama. They beat everybody else. They're 10-2. I think they're into the playoff. You could say the same about Tennessee, perhaps. And the discussion about whether they'll be able to get five in will come down to whether a 9-3 Tennessee or a 9-3 LSU or a 9-3 Ole Miss, whoever it is, or 9-3 Missouri, who are your wins against? And what caliber of schedule are you going up against?
Right.
Because if you are, you know, going up against an 11-1 Big 12, that I don't know how an 11-1 Big 12 isn't in the Big 12 championship game. So let's say 10-2. If you're going at 9-3 Big 12 or 9-3 SEC, 10-2 Big 12,
okay,
or 10-2 ACC,
you're going to look at the records. You're going to look at the schedule. Yeah.
Yeah, and
you have to.
And you know, they had to begin today's pressers, they had a member of the college football playoff up, and I asked them a question about how they're going to weigh that, and he kind of gave a non-answer, but I thought it was the right answer because essentially what his response boiled down to was, hey, I can't answer that flat without seeing the information in front of me. Because and I think what that leaves the door open to is if you have a 9-3, if Florida goes 9-3.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
No.
But if they go 9-3.
If they go 9-3,
is that a more impressive season than Kansas going 10-2 with a favorable Big 12 schedule by a landslide?
I think so.
By a landslide.
Or a team out of the Big 10 or something like that. I mean,
the Big 10, I think, has more of a case with the four teams that they're bringing in.
Right.
If it had only been USC, UCLA, it'd be a little iffy. because I think the worst kept secret in college football is the middle, the bottom, the Big Ten's pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's not like the teams at the top are really good. You know, Penn State's really good, Ohio State, Michigan, they've been great over the years.
Sure.
But they've always been up there because the teams that are behind them aren't as close, mm-hmm. even as they appear to be sometimes. And that's why you have seen blowout scores in the Big Ten championship game pretty regularly. But adding Oregon and Washington into the fold, you know, with USC and UCLA, I think UCLA is a bottom dweller in the Big Ten this year. I think Washington is middle of the pack. I think USC is just above middle of the pack. And I think Oregon's a bona fide conference title contender this year. I think that makes a 10-2 Big Ten team that misses, you know, the perennial Penn State, you could call them. I think that team has a 90%+ chance of being in the playoff.
Okay.
But
okay.
But 9-3 Big Ten, I don't think we'll get as much credibility, just generally speaking, schedule dependent, as a 9-3 SEC.
I think you're on the right track there. I really do. I agree with that. And I think it just, again, it speaks to how tough the SEC is top to bottom outside of, you know, Vanderbilt. I mean, who even, you know, Auburn found out you still got to play them and you got to play well.
Still got to play them. I mean, heck, they beat Florida a couple of years ago.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
And that's a crazy thing to think about. Like, Vanderbilt beat Florida? Like, that doesn't sound right. But you know what? Crazy things have happened in college football. I watched New Mexico State go into Jordan-Hare Stadium last year and walk away a big winner. And that offensive staff, by the way, got poached by Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Clark Lee went out and made some hires because he knows that there's pressure on his program to improve, or else he will probably be relieved of his duties. I think he's got one of the hottest seats in the SEC going into 2024. Mm-hmm. He's got an offensive staff that is, at the very least, capable. I talked with Jordan Rogers of the SEC Network and ESPN earlier today, and he alluded to that, and he's absolutely right that that's a staff that is certainly capable. But I think I got to bounce because Steve Sarkisian's taking the stage up there.
Okay, yeah, man. Well, hey, plug all your stuff one more. Plug it and tell
Locked
where
on College Football,
it.
Locked on Ducks, Monday through Friday on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And I'm on X, formerly known as Twitter, at S. McLaughlin CFB. You want to give me a follow? But great to talk to the fine people of Alabama down there.
Awesome, man. Appreciate your time. We'll take a break, come back, and continue here on the Wednesday edition on the line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back here at SEC Media Days 2024, day three underway and really wrapping up now as Steve Sarkisian from Texas is in the main room just across the hall. Just took the main podium about 5 minutes or so ago. And again, we appreciate you all being with us here on ESPN 106.7. Also appreciate Spencer McLaughlin from Locked On College Football and Locked On Ducks stopping by. Again, just he was walking through and we decided to have him on the show. And so we appreciate him hopping on and talking a lot about all sorts of teams around the SEC. So shorter segment here, and we'll kind of, you know, put a bow on everything, and then we'll get to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Looking forward to seeing and hearing from him about Georgia Day yesterday, about what we heard from Kirby Smart, some of the players, and what we can look forward to as we're 45 days away from the start of college football. Also, a reminder, coming up in hour number two, Ty Richardson from ESPN Arkansas will be joining us right at 3 o'clock. He'll be starting the second hour with us here on the show, and my interview with Chris Doering from the SEC Network, we'll have that for you at 3:30. So again, just a jam-packed day once again, and some of the things that Spencer was talking about there a second ago, you know, with Alabama who went today, and even Texas that is going right now. Like, Texas, look, they have high expectations, and it would be a big deal for them to come into the SEC and dominate like they've done in the Big 12 the past couple of years. If they could come in and show that, yes, they're still a good team, a good program, but they can be that in the SEC, I think it would mean a lot to them. And given their schedule this year, they have a chance to do that. I mean, there's multiple reasons why Texas is one of the betting favorites to make the college football playoff. Yes, their team is good. Yes, Sark is good. But that schedule is also pretty good. I mean, it's going to allow them to win a lot of games this year. And if they do that, then they're going to be just fine. They'll probably be in the SEC championship game. And as you heard Spencer say, I totally agree. Whoever makes that, you're going to be in the college football playoff. Unless some crazy 8-4 team makes the SEC championship, which will never happen, you can pretty much go ahead and Sharpie. Whoever makes the SEC championship game moving forward, you're going to be in the college football playoff. Well, coming up, we'll talk with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Get caught up on all things Georgia. Stick around. We're here live at SEC Media Days. All right, we're halfway through hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm Jacob Goins with you on Radio Row in Dallas, Texas at SEC Football Media Days 2024 as day three is rocking and rolling. Again, Steve Sarkisian in the room across from us talking at the main podium from Texas right now. But we're going to talk a little Georgia as Kirby Smart and the guys were here yesterday. And we talk to this man each and every week on Wednesday at 2:30, normally over the phone, but we get to have Jordan Hill in person this year. Man, it's great to see you. Great to have you on the program once again, and hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Jacob. And we need to do this in person more often. I don't know how many times I'm going to be taking a shuttle from Athens to Auburn, but no, always fun to come sit down and catch up and talk about the Bulldogs, talk about another football season.
Well, yesterday was Georgia Day with Kirby Smart and the players that came with him. I'll let you talk about them in just a second. But overall, what'd you think of not their performance, but their appearance and their showing at SEC Media Days?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it went well. I thought that Kirby went up there and sort of shared the message and sort of shared what his expectations and the outlook for the season are. You know, he talked about, and I thought it was really interesting, that this team is not getting caught up on the fact that they did not make the playoff last year, that drive to win three straight national championships, that the fact they didn't do that is not lingering over this team. It's not something they talk about. And we heard Carson Beck talk about that a little bit when he was out there talking about that. You know, you can't change your approach whether you go 12-0 or 0-12 the year before. You need to focus on the now, and that matches what we've heard from Georgia a bunch. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was great seeing Carson Beck, Malachi Starks, Michael Williams. I think that, you know, they really did enjoy the chance to come out here. And again, you know, I'm cognizant of, you know, this is history. Who had never been to Dallas before for SEC Media Days. This is, they can say for the rest of their lives, yeah, I was at the Media Days when Texas and Oklahoma joined.
Right.
So I think they took it all in. I think they had a good time. And I think they did a very good job of sort of sharing the message within this program, what they're looking for this year.
Well, we got good news from Greg Sankey on Monday. SEC Media Days in 2025 is back in Atlanta, so that's a much quicker trip for guys like you and me. You guys coming from Athens, how far is that trip?
It's about an hour and a half.
That's about what it is for us, hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, I know people in Athens, anyone who's had to drive back and forth on Highway 316, they're not going to be that excited about that, but it beats a flight out to Dallas, although it's been fun, but I am not sad it's in our backyard next year.
Yeah, and you know, the setup is a little bit different. It's at the College Football Hall of Fame there in Atlanta, and it's a little bit different, and I've really enjoyed the setup here in Dallas. But in terms of what Kirby Smart and the players had to say, something that you and I have talked about on the show and something that happened recently was more players being in trouble and getting arrested for reckless driving and racing and doing all those things. It wasn't addressed in the main media room, but he was asked the question in the electronic media room, and his answer was interesting to me. He said it's obviously disappointing, but he is confident in the programs they have in place and the policies that they have. And he got a little defensive, as you would think. And so I'm curious on what you thought about how he handled that.
You know, we really got into it in the local beat session before he went on the main stage. And he gave, I thought, pretty good insight on how they're handling it. He brought up something that was news to us, that the Classic City Collective, sort of their NIL collective, he said for over a year had been withholding payments to players who find themselves in these kind of situations.
Okay.
And he's not someone, you know, he didn't go into a ton of detail, but, you know, he talked about the fact that, you know, they are doing what they can to educate, to try to get players on the right page and understanding the severity of the situations they've been in. He announced when he was talking to local media that one of the defensive backs, David Daniel Sisavon, has been dismissed. He would not say if it was a driving-related situation, but we do know that David Daniel Sisavon had been arrested earlier this year. So I thought he gave good perspective when he was talking to local media. I was watching to see, you know, if there was a reaction of, you know, why wasn't this brought up in the big room? And I didn't necessarily see that, but it was discussed with the people who cover the team on a daily basis. I thought he gave good perspective. And even talking to the players, you know, they understand how serious this is. And Carson Beck talked about, you know, just – about a year and a half ago, they lost a player and a recruiting staffer in a car crash. He talked about, I think, when he was 15 or 16, losing a friend in a car crash. That, you know, they understand the severity of this. And Carson talked about, you know, that there's a lot of people on the team making the right decisions. There's some that are not. And you just hope, again, as I've talked on other radio shows, on podcasts talking about this issue, you know, you want people to just make the right decision and keep themselves safe and keep everybody around them safe. So we'll see if the way they're approaching this leads to a change. And hopefully we don't see these issues continuing as we get closer and closer to the year.
Well, it's good to hear that he is coming out and finally saying that players are being suspended or let go or not being paid their NIL money, which was something that I was saying needed to happen, right? Take away the two things that they all want, playing time and their money, right? I mean, that's what everybody wants nowadays. And to stop stuff like this, take away the things that they want, and you have a better chance of stopping it. So I had not heard that, and so I'm glad you brought that up, or I'm glad you mentioned that, and I'm glad that Kirby said that, because that had not been said before.
Yeah, it was news to us, and I was told a long time ago the worst place you can hit a man is his wallet.
That's what they say, yeah, and that's where a lot of these players, again, with playing time and their money, that's the things that they want. So I'm glad that he said that allows us to give him a little bit more grace, I guess, and hopefully this can get solved moving forward. In terms of the team itself, though, Jordan, coming up this year, as we are 45 days away from Georgia getting their season started in the college football year of 2024. What did you were you able to talk to the players about this upcoming season, kind of what their feelings are on the roster and the schedule and all the changes going on around the league?
Well, I think that it's very interesting for Georgia, and I think this helps Georgia that they've got a marquee game to start this thing. They're going to be playing Clemson in Atlanta's Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So I do think that that helps them with the perspective of not looking forward. And, you know, every once in a while you would hear in the big room, hey, you know, what do you guys think about playing Ole Miss or playing Texas? But it's always the mission of, hey, we got to play Clemson first, and we got a big game there. But, no, I think that there is a real excitement. I think that you look at Carson Beck, I think a big part of why he's back for his senior season is the fact they didn't win a national championship, and that's something he wants. He's talked about in the past, really when he had first become the starting quarterback, you know, he's been on two national championship teams, but he's told teammates, you know, I don't have a national championship. You know, there is a difference in being on a team that wins one and you going out and winning one.
And winning
one.
It, yeah.
Exactly. So I do think there's a motivation with this team. I think that they understand it's not going to be easy playing at Ole Miss, playing at Alabama, playing at Texas. It's not going to come easy. But you've got a little bit more margin for error with a 12-team playoff if you were to drop one or two of those games. Georgia sees itself as a national title contender. They've done it enough that they know they can't look ahead and get caught sleeping in any of these games.
Yeah.
But I think there's a real excitement. They understand they got a chance to go out and do something really special.
I'll give Kirby Smart credit. This is my third SEC Media Days this year as part of the media. And every year that I've heard him speak, he's been on the same message of, look, what we did a year ago has nothing to do with what we do this year, whether that was winning national championships or falling short like they did a year ago. He's been consistent on that message of, look, this is a new year. It's a new day. It's a new us. It's a new team, and we're going to treat it that way. And I think that's what has led to him being so successful as the head coach of Georgia.
And I think the biggest thing is when you talk to those players, if, you know, you didn't recognize their voice or anything, you would swear that it's Kirby Smart. They buy in, and they're on the same page about how they got to approach these things. And again, you look at the one game they lost, they lose by 3 to Alabama, and you're talking about a few third and shorts that don't go Georgia's way. You talk about a trick play that winds up being fumbled, and it leads to a short field for Alabama. I mean, it was the margin for error in that game was so small. And I think that these guys understand that they've got a really talented roster once again. There are guys that didn't play big roles last year that have to step up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they realize that it's a process. And, you know, probably hearing Nick Saban talk about that quite a bit while he's on the network at the table in the back. But No, I think that they're ready. I think they understand at this point what it takes to be in this position. And I think this is a team we're going to be talking about as a national title contender throughout this fall.
Jordan Hill of Dawgs 247 sitting with us at the table here on Radio Row at SEC Media Days. He's with us every Wednesday over the phone, but again, happy to have him in person here at SEC Media Days. It's that time of year where people start talking expectations, and you were bringing up the college football playoff, and I'm sure that's what Georgia fans are expecting is another appearance, definitely now that it's expanded college football playoff. But you brought up that schedule, and it's tougher than it's been in the past. I think most people can admit that. Auburn fans definitely want to highlight that Georgia hasn't maybe played the toughest schedule in the past compared to what Auburn's had to go through for years and years. But Georgia, if they do get to 10 or 11 wins, they're going to earn it this year with those road games. And even, again, Auburn coming to Athens with a chance to be 5-0 if they are in that game. I mean, that could be a really marquee matchup for the season as well.
Definitely. I mean, you talk about the teams, the games we had already mentioned, at Ole Miss, at Alabama, at Texas. But then you factor in an Auburn, you factor in Tennessee coming back. I think Tennessee could be really good this year. It's going to be really, really tough. I think it's funny when we looked at last year, going into the year, a big part of the conversation was, well, Georgia may not be able to lean on this schedule if they were to drop a game.
Yeah.
And it wound up being a little bit of a tougher schedule than we thought, mainly because Missouri came out of nowhere and
right.
had such a great season.
That's a good point.
But, you know, we're not having that same conversation this year because we know it's a very loaded schedule.
Right.
And again, my thing is it would be a heck of an accomplishment if they go undefeated. But if you go 11-1, if you go 10-2, you're going to have a really strong case to still make the 12-team playoff. And I think more than ever in this 12-team playoff era, you know, you want to be tested in the regular season. If you're a national championship caliber team, you need to play these really tough games because, you know, it might not lead to you making the playoff, but if you think you're playoff caliber, you better be tested because
yeah.
all the best teams are going to be playing in the playoff, and you want to have a chance to go out there and win some games and try to take home a national title.
After you've been talking with Kirby Smart, whether it be here at Media Days or just kind of throughout the offseason, some of the players as well, and just your overall assessment of this Georgia team this year, which side of the ball is going to be the anchor? Which one's going to be the more confident side that Kirby Smart or that fans can rely on to know, okay, we've got this part in. If the other side shows up, then things are going to go well, which side of the football do you think, offense or defense, will be the strength of Georgia this year?
It's hard to pick against a defense because they're always so good with Kirby, but I think the defense has a few more questions. I feel really good about where this offense is. With Carson Beck coming back, they go get Trevor Etienne from Florida.
Dude, I keep forgetting that Etienne is at Georgia.
you should go to dogs247.com. I just wrote a story there, Jacob. You can learn more about
it. Okay. Yep, there you go.
Do that plug. But the biggest questions to me are on the defense, seeing that interior defensive line. This is something that I've talked about all week. They don't have a Jalen Carter or a Jordan Davis, and you know, those are few and far between. It's hard to get those guys.
You better believe it.
But they need guys to step up, I think, specifically on the interior defensive line. We need to see if Michael Williams has a bounce back. He's going to be playing a little bit more outside linebacker than he has in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Need some guys to step up. Another safety opposite Malachi Starks. Daylon Everett coming back as a starter. Can he take a step forward? Because it was kind of up and down his first year as a starter. Again, if you're a Georgia fan, I think you should be optimistic because we're saying we feel really good about the offense. Defense has some questions, but I mean, Kirby Smart and Glenn Schumann and all those guys and having T-Rob come over, you feel really good about what they'll do with this defense. It may not happen overnight, but I think they've still got plenty of talent and need guys to step up, and I think that they'll get the job done.
The Auburn game in week 5, I'm pulling up Georgia's schedule right now. Going into that week, I'm looking at what Georgia has. I mean, realistically, if they beat Clemson week 1, they should be undefeated when Auburn comes to town. Is that the expectation?
Oh, for sure.
And then Auburn, it's going to be tougher, right? Auburn will have, you've got the Cal game, you've got Arkansas, and then you have Oklahoma is the week before Auburn goes to Georgia. But let's play my favorite game. What if Auburn and Georgia are both 5-0, undefeated in that game? I mean, that's going to be a top 25 matchup between the hedges. It's going to be a big, big game. Bigger. It's always big when Auburn and Georgia get together, but the postseason applications on that game that early in the season, they're going to be sky high.
Oh, definitely, and it's one that, you know, I think that's a great proving ground for Auburn, and obviously they want to come in there and win that game. But even if they hang around, I think that that bodes really well for the rest of the year. Because, you know, I think it's kind of funny when we talk about Auburn, especially the last few years. You know, sometimes you kind of have to give the caveat of like, yeah, but that happened in Jordan-Hare. Like, you know, you kind of have to. But if right. you do that, if you go into Athens, and even if you don't beat Georgia, if you hang with Georgia for four quarters, you know, that's a place that Auburn has struggled in for quite a while. I want to say
long time.
05 might be the last time that Auburn won in Athens. So I think that's a great proving ground for Auburn, especially if they are undefeated going into that game. They're going to have their hands full trying to beat Georgia in, you know, between the hedges. But I think that it has the potential to be a really marquee game. And again, you know, when you look back at the Gus Malzahn era, a big knock on his tenure was not being able to win those rivalry games on the road.
Yeah.
And Hugh still got a long way to go. I know, you know, he's not been around quite as long as Gus, but it always helps to play these games close. And if you can win one, especially early in your tenure, that'll definitely get the fans on your side.
I forget that Georgia goes to Tuscaloosa before Auburn comes to Athens. That's a huge – that's two massive games for Georgia back-to-back. I forgot about that.
I like the fact that they set that up as Kalen DeBoer's first SEC game. It's like, yeah. Hey man, welcome to the SEC. We know you you made the national title last year at Washington, but
here's Georgia,
and now you get to at least you get them at home. You know,
we'll
give Alabama that at least it's not in Athens. But yeah, they're going to get tested right out of the gates.
One more thing before we let you go. Again, speaking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, a friend of the program, Daryl Dapperich from Locked On Auburn and Montgomery radio legend, was able to ask Kirby Smart the question about Auburn being the homecoming game for Georgia, and Kirby was not very pleased with the question and got a little defensive about it, claiming he didn't know anything about it, which I don't really think I believe that, but we'll take his word for it. Were you surprised to see that was claimed the homecoming game? I know at the end of the day it doesn't mean a whole lot, but it does seem to be a little bit of a knock on Auburn. Be like, hey, by the way, we're going to just make this our homecoming game when you guys are coming to town.
I do wonder how much goes into that calculation for teams, because I feel like it used to be a big deal, at least when I was younger, where I was like, oh, and very clearly this game will be their homecoming, and then sometimes it just sort of feels like an afterthought. But yeah, I wouldn't think to put Auburn as a homecoming game. You know, I feel like, and no disrespect to Vanderbilt, I feel like most of the time Vandy is Georgia's homecoming game.
Well, Mississippi State's the week after, which is why I thought maybe that would be it, which is, again, it just adds to the weirdness.
Right. I guess it might just be sort of a calculation of let's try to get in, you know, a bunch of people to be part of this rivalry game. But the thing is, you don't ever want to lose that game. It's never fun to pack the house with a bunch of alums and lose it. So
yeah.
I'm sure Kirby, if he had his say, probably wouldn't have had it be Auburn. But yeah, it is definitely different, I feel like, with how they've sort of set up homecoming games in recent years.
Jordan Hill, Dogs 247, our weekly Georgia guest here on ESPN 106.7. Man, it's always a pleasure to see you, catch up with you in person. We're going to be talking to you all fall, winter, going through the spring as we always do. Plug it all. Tell people where they can find it and what's coming up and what is a part of your coverage here at SEC Media Days.
Yeah, dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at dogs247. So yeah, a lot of content out of this week, a lot of Georgia stories. Had a chance to talk to some of the teammates and coaches of some of Georgia's newest transfers in. As I mentioned, got a story up this afternoon on Trevor Etienne. So some good stuff talking to Graham Mertz and some of those guys about him. But yeah, a lot of content out of this. We'll be writing stuff about all SEC later in the week and some of my picks, some of the players I think will stand out. So best thing about the SEC Media Days experience, Jacob, is we get enough stuff to kind of bridge the gap in the fall camp.
That's
so
right.
There's plenty to get and plenty to ride out of these days down in Dallas, and it'll help us get to the season, and we'll be there before we know it.
Go check it out, dogs247.com. You can check Jordan Hill and all the wonderful riders at Dogs247. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap up hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line as we are live from SEC Media Days 2024 in Dallas, Texas. I'm Jacob Goins with you on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 stopping by, talking things Georgia. And, man, you look at that schedule for the Dogs, and it's just – it's so much more difficult than it used to be now with the SEC East and West no longer being a thing, right? They open up with Clemson. They go to Kentucky, which, again, I've told you this. I'm not buying into that game anymore. I refuse to do it. Kentucky's burned me too many times. I've tried to hype them up. I've tried to say they're going to get Georgia, and they always get blown out. So not doing it, not going to buy into it this year. Then they go on the road to Alabama, and they do have a bye week in there. At Kentucky, bye week, at Alabama, before Auburn comes to town for homecoming. And so if you're Auburn, you've got to be thinking that's an advantage, right? You've got to be thinking there's an opportunity. If you are going to get Georgia, you might have a chance to do it. And I know it's on the road, and I don't think we have a kick off time set for that yet. We don't. But Auburn, you look, if you're 5-0, you got nothing to lose in that game against Georgia. And we'll see if the Tigers can be 5-0 when they go to Athens on October 5th. We're just getting started here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Ty Richardson from ESPN Arkansas will join us coming up to start Hour 2. And my conversation with Chris Doering from the SEC Network. All that and more coming up in Hour Number 2 here as we are live at SEC Media Days.
Are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 as we are coming at you live from Radio Row in Dallas, Texas at SEC Media Days as we get in to hour number two. If you missed any of the first hour of the show today, it was a lot of fun. We had Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, our weekly Georgia guest, who was able to join us live on the show. Talk to him about all things Georgia, how Kirby Smart went yesterday. The players were here and just talking about the upcoming season for the Dogs. Also had Spencer McLaughlin, the host of Locked On College Football, who stopped by and talked to us for a little bit. So that was all in hour number one. If you missed any of it, you can catch up with the podcast after the show today. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. You can also listen to the show live there each and every day or on the Radio Alabama app. Hour number two of today's show and every show here on ESPN during 2 to 4. The second hour, 3 to 4, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. And speaking of the Orthopedic Clinic, they are one of our many sponsors of our SEC Media Days coverage here this week. The Orthopedic Clinic, Plaza Bar and Lounge, Roots Real Estate, State Farm Insurance Agent Callie Brian Chaddock, Wisdom Law Firm, and University Ace Hardware. Thank you to those local businesses in the Auburn Opelika area for sending us out to Dallas. And as I told you, to start hour number two, we're joined by a really good friend of mine, a guy that you can hear if you happen to be driving through the Arkansas area. You can listen to him on ESPN Arkansas. Ty Richardson sitting with us now at the table here on ESPN 106.7. What's up, brother? How are you?
Jacob, good, buddy. Good to be here. Happy to jump on with you as always, and excited for week four. That's a big game for both programs, and definitely a more winnable game for Auburn.
That's what Auburn fans are looking for, right? I mean, it's a game that Auburn fans are expecting to win. I think it's fair to say the Auburn's roster is probably in a better spot with compared to Arkansas. And so, week four is going to be a lot of fun. And for Auburn to do what they want to do this season, you have to win the Arkansas game. That's what we've talked a lot about.
Yeah, because you followed up with Oklahoma and Jackson Arnold the week right after, which, as we've discussed, I mean, Jordan-Hare Stadium, it doesn't get talked about enough. It's one of the best atmospheres in the SEC. People often say LSU Tiger Stadium, the Swamp. Bryant Denny is really cool, and the lights were really cool. I had a chance to take in Sanford Stadium. But I think this Auburn atmosphere that I'll take in the fourth weekend will be a lot better than what I saw 2 years ago,
which,
where Brian Harsin was let go the next day as I was driving. He got let go before I even made it back to Arkansas, which is pretty wild.
Well, it was just, that was a horrible time in Auburn football. I've said it's the darkest times I've ever seen at Auburn. I mean, it was that bad, Ty, and I'm sure you saw that from the outside. But going into this year, we'll talk a little bit Auburn in that game in particular. But with Arkansas, I mean, Pittman is just, I feel like he's on the hot seat, right? I feel like he's got to make it happen this year. I'll be honest, I was kind of surprised that he survived last year and is coming back as the head coach, but I'm curious where you stand on that.
Well, I wasn't really surprised that he made it through the season. You got to remember, Arkansas was 2-10, 2-10, back-to-back seasons under Chad Morris. Then Sam Pittman got him 3 SEC wins immediately in the COVID year. Maybe he should have had 1 or 2 more. Mm-hmm. They followed up with the 9-win season. Arkansas is in a weird spot right now where the additions of Texas and Oklahoma, I would argue, would hurt them more than any other team in the league. I know Texas A&M feels some type of way. Ross Bjork had those initial comments, I think, 2 years ago at SEC Media Days, their athletics director. But the impact is tough. And, I mean, think about the recruits that Auburn has to fight over against, I hate to say it, a better program in their own state, Alabama. It's not in-state, but you've got two programs that kids you may have been able to sway in previous years because you were in the SEC. You don't have that advantage anymore with Texas and Oklahoma entering the league as of this past July.
Yeah, that's a good point from just not even the competition on the field standpoint, but the recruiting, off the field that you have to deal with. And now, I mean, Arkansas, look, it's still a great program. It's a great school. It's a great place to be, but it just got even harder to convince kids to go there. Auburn, I mean, is in the same boat. Not that we're directly recruiting against Texas and Oklahoma, but, I mean, two big-name teams that now share the same logo on the jersey, it makes it that much more difficult.
Yeah, and Auburn has the backing of a 2010 national championship, a 2013 national championship appearance, a Heisman Trophy winner in the last decade or so. Arkansas should have had one about 2 decades ago with Darren McFadden. Didn't pan out, but I mean, they're in a much better spot right now. Freeze is – there's no question that he's in a better spot than Sam Pittman. I am curious, though, what Peyton Thorne is going to be for you guys this season. We were kind of chatting about this earlier. You've got this kid that at times didn't know he was going to be the starter last year because they were rotating Ashford a little bit, and now he's spent all offseason as that said starter. I mean, he could come into that. He ripped up. The best game he had all season was against Arkansas. I mean, so what's to go against the idea of him parlaying that back-to-back and ripping Arkansas up at home? Don't want it to happen, but there's some truth that it might.
Well, that was one of the few games last year that Auburn fans were excited about and felt good about, because Auburn, look, nobody expected that to happen, but they went into Fayetteville and just lit it up and just had a field day.
It was gross. It was painful to watch. Wanted to claw my eyes out, but let's be blunt. It's happened before. I mean, Gus Malzahn years were brutal, because Arkansas would play in that game and lose like 56-3. And he'd run it up because I think he harbors some ill will still to the university even to this day. Don't know that to be fact, but he sure took it out on the field multiple times.
Yeah, there ain't no doubt. Well, I just pulled up the Arkansas schedule this year, and I've looked at it a few times, but it's not easy by any means. And look, Arkansas is in the same boat as Auburn was playing in the SEC West, where you get the toughest teams in the nation every single year. You play the Alabamas and the LSUs and playing Auburn. Like, you had those schedules and Texas A&M, like, Arkansas was always up there with Auburn as one of the hardest schedules in college football.
Oh, yeah.
And so now, looking at it this year, right, you have a Week 2 game at Oklahoma State, Ty. I don't know why in the world Arkansas decided to do it. Yes, it's cool, but man, that's going to be a tough trip.
Yeah, Stillwater not too far from Fayetteville. A lot of Arkansas fans will make that 2.5-3 hour trek, whatever it is. But I mean, that team's going to be playing about 30 minutes from us in 4 months in the Big 12 championship game in Jerry World. So you're not going to win that game. So similar to how pivotal that game is for Auburn in Week 4, I mean, Arkansas can't be 2-2 heading into the game against Texas A&M, because history shows you're not going to win that game either.
Not that
Jordan-Hare Stadium has been kind to you, but that is it's a rough go. And Auburn's not necessarily just an unwinnable game, but I'm not feeling great about it right now. And I mean, past precedent would tell me I'm right, because they rarely win at Auburn.
Yeah, at Auburn Week 4, then A&M at home, You play, or the A&M game will be neutral site. You play Tennessee at home, LSU at home, Ole Miss at home. You got Mississippi State squeezed in there. You get Texas at home, and you end the season at Missouri. So most of your tough games, at least they're in Fayetteville. I mean, again, Texas and Ole Miss and LSU, like those are big games to have there at Razorback Country.
And it's, I mean, it's one of those things where, similar to Jordan-Hare Stadium, when Hogs are good, place will be rocking.
Sure.
Not good, place ain't going to do that much. Like, I still remember the game that Cadillac Williams took over post-Brian Harsin.
Yeah.
And that was just a different feel. All of a sudden, the Auburn fans got rejuvenated, and rightfully so. There's been several other games, kick six, 20. I mean, you just point to, if the team's good, the stadium is going to be rocking. And if the team's not, that Texas game that Arkansas fans have been looking forward to is not going to mean so much on November the 16th.
Yeah, what does that rivalry, the old school rivalry, what does that mean to have that back this year?
So I think one of the things you have to look at is similar to other big longstanding rivalries in the SEC, one team has had the advantage over the other, unfortunately. And for Auburn fans listening, Alabama's had the advantage. But you always play that game tough.
Yeah.
Like, Auburn, two of the last 4 years has no business being in that game at all. Brought one of the Bryce Young years last. I mean, there are certain games that it's like you look on paper and look at the talent, you're like, why is this team? Because it's a rivalry game.
Yeah.
And Texas is always going to be superior. They've got probably the second best roster in the SEC. Yet if Arkansas hasn't completely let go of a rope, that's probably a one-score game. Texas is going to win, but it's going to be a close football game, as a couple of these Alabama-Auburn games have been, where Auburn has no business being on the field with them, and yet it's an incredible football game.
Ty Richardson of ESPN Arkansas joining us here as we get started in hour number two. Tell us a little bit about this Arkansas team. What can Auburn fans expect to see offensively, defensively in week four, especially at that quarterback spot, and what the Tigers can expect to see week four?
Well, they got a lot of new faces. No Rocket Sanders, no KJ Jefferson, no AJ Green. So Auburn fans are going to be really unfamiliar who they're going against, outside of maybe Sam Pittman. Travis Williams is probably the most familiar name, former Auburn linebacker, defensive coordinator. T-Will's really liked. He's still recruiting his tail off. He got this Tavian Wallace kid from Jepsup, Georgia the other day, which a lot of SEC teams were after. So it's really an interesting thing, because T-Will was the better coordinator last year and it wasn't even close. And they were both entering year one. And Arkansas fans were really happy, because on the road, that's when Travis Williams' defenses were the best. Jackson Dart had a bad game. Jalen Miller had a bad game. Jaden Daniels had a bad first half. Not so much in the second half.
Yeah.
But I would just say a team that is going to be competitive. That's based on what you saw last year, them on the road, I still expect Auburn to win this game. But I don't think it's going to be a blowout like we. It was a massacre. It was a bloodbath. It was the worst game that Arkansas played at home all season, and that's saying something considering they scored 3 points against Mississippi State.
That's true. Yeah, that is true. Well, as you look at the team and you look at the schedule, and you're coming into this pivotal year for Sam Pittman, what are Arkansas fans, what are their realistic expectations for the season? Record-wise, performance-wise, I mean, all of that combined. I mean, what are they expecting in Fayetteville this year?
Your win total is 4.5. So, I mean, 5-6 wins.
I mean, bowl game.
I've got them in around that 5 or 6 win range. I'm of the belief that if they get to 6, Sam Pittman keeps his job. If they go under, there's a good chance he's not the Arkansas head football coach next year. The thing about Sam Pittman, and I think Hugh Freeze would say this, he's a likable guy. I don't know if Sam ever coached for Coach Freeze, but most SEC coaches, you know how there's some SEC coaches that riffs and they don't like each other?
Yeah.
I think all other 15 of the coaches like Sam.
He's a likable dude.
But it's just a matter of, like, can you win enough games to keep your job? And he knows that. He's very aware. You want to ride off into the sunset if you're Sam Pittman, if not this year, in years to come. And he's got an opportunity to do that. I just think he has to hit bowl eligibility. If you don't, you put your job in peril, unfortunately.
The problem that I see with that, Ty, is if Sam Pittman is let go, if after another, you know, poor season this year, the question everybody asks, okay, who do you get? Who do you go after, right? And, you know, you've got to go find somebody. And with college coaches making more money than they ever have before, like, you got to go and pay somebody really high money to come in and be the next head coach.
Yeah, you do. And Arkansas is in a situation, everyone just thinks the money, the cup overfloweth with John Calipari coming in and becoming Arkansas's basketball coach, which, by the way, is going to be a fantastic game in the jungle later on this season.
It's going to be awesome.
I think there's a misconception about Arkansas athletics. People just say Walmart money. John Tyson provided the majority, and Warren Stevens Inc., provided the majority of money to get Cal to come to Fayetteville. You've had the Hunts that have been very supportive of Arkansas basketball and baseball. But in football, there's a car dealer amongst other business owner named Frank Fletcher, instrumental in getting Bobby Petrino to Arkansas. But the Waltons aren't really involved with football of Walmart. And they haven't necessarily cracked that code just yet. So if that's the case, then Arkansas, assuming that, let's go under the impression that happens, they've got to figure out if a donor is willing to invest, as you said, a lot of money in their next football coach. I don't know what amount of money it took for Hugh Freeze to come to Auburn. I think our Auburn fans are happy he's there. And I think they could take – no one's talking about Auburn. No one's going to be at Media Days with Auburn tomorrow. No one's talking about them as a dark horse or anything. Listen, Hugh Freeze is a guy – the games that – are minimal and don't matter. He's occasionally going to slip up one or two. But you look at his track record against Alabama, win, should have won three in a row. That doesn't happen against Nick Saban. Rare is it that you beat Nick Saban once.
Right.
This guy should have beat him not twice, but three times. And I think that's the most attractive thing about him if you're an Auburn fan, is that he knows how to beat Alabama. And by the way, Nick Saban's not even there anymore. So no, none. I mean, that's not a disrespect to Kalen DeBoer, but the job got a hell of a lot easier.
Yeah, it absolutely did. And so, look, and I'm with you, man. Nobody, we've talked about that this week. Nobody's talking about Auburn. You're exactly right. I mean, look, Thursdays at SEC Media Days are always weird because if it's not one of the teams that you're covering, everybody dips out. Everybody gets out of here. You and I will be here tomorrow because Auburn and Arkansas both go on the final day. But it will be. It'll be a ghost town because especially Auburn, we're in the afternoon. Hugh Freeze doesn't talk until 1 o'clock in the main room. So you're right. Nobody's going to be here, and nobody's giving Auburn a chance because of how last season ended. I think a lot of that plays into it with New Mexico State, 4th and 31, and then a poor performance in the bowl game.
Yeah, and you got, if you're an Auburn fan, you're disappointed by the quote-unquote disrespect. You can't be that because of certain things that happen with the New Mexico game and the bowl game. But again, Freeze always gets – Freeze in Oxford got his guys fired up for those big-time games.
Yeah.
He had a awesome wide receiver recruiting haul that you referred to. Peyton Thorne is in year two of his offense. There are things that you as a SEC fan, non-Auburn, should be aware that that's not a cakewalk. Oklahoma should be worried, especially as we were talking about, if Auburn beats Arkansas in week four and they're walking into that game, there's no, I would bet any amount of money that Jackson Arnold and Oklahoma do not win that game in week five. They might be 4-0 as well.
Yeah.
But you're not winning in Auburn week five with a young quarterback, his first SEC game. There is no chance that happens.
I'm with you. I like that. I like it. Well, man, you're winning people over in Auburn, my man. You keep talking highly of them. They're going to welcome you with open arms when you come down in September.
Hopefully so. Hopefully a listener or two will just set me up with their niece or daughter at some point. I just have this affinity for Auburn women, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they just start calling your name, right? You said it's, what, the brunette capital of the South or something?
Brunette capital of the world, man.
Of the world.
Not just the South, but the world. You find your wife in a few select places in the conference, and Auburn is one of those.
That's awesome, man. Well, hey, tell people how they can find you if they want to tune in, get some more information on Arkansas.
Yeah, so I guess no travel for football or basketball this year. Maybe Auburn fans that make the baseball trek to Bob Walker Stadium, hitthatline.com at Tie Sports Radio, and hopefully next to you at Sky Bar and what's the place? Halftime?
Halftime, yeah.
The other two places in September.
All right, man. We appreciate it. Ty Richardson, ESPN Arkansas, joining us here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We'll come back, continue talking, see if we can get some quotes from what Stark had to say in the main room before Chris Doering sits down from SEC Network. All that coming up here in hour number two on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back back here at SEC Media Days 2024 live on Radio Row in Dallas, Texas. I'm Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7. Shout out to Ty Richardson from ESPN Arkansas, who started off hour number two with us here on Radio Row. Talked a lot of Auburn, Arkansas, the game that's coming up in week four for Auburn this season. And look, it's just such an important game, right? It's an important game for Auburn. If you win it, you're 4-0 when Oklahoma comes to town. If you lose it, you're threatening to go 3-2 before the month of October. And at that point, you're in trouble if you're Hugh Freeze and Auburn. So looking forward to that game. Ty will hopefully be in town. And look, man, he's an awesome dude, a great friend. And you can tell we have a lot of fun when we get together, get in the same town, things typically go down. But coming up here in just a few minutes, we're going to have Chris Doering from SEC Network. I sat down with him earlier today. We'll have that interview for you. Really, really good to talk with Chris Doering from the SEC Network about everything happening here at SEC Media Days. And tons of buzz going on right now. Sark was just in the main room a little bit ago. Believe some of the players are in there. Quinn Ewers is in there from Texas. And look, man, there's a lot of expectations for Texas this year. And on the flip side of the coin, Oklahoma, right? A team and a program stepping into the SEC and getting no favors this year with that schedule. It's brutal. It's terrible. Them in Florida, I was hearing and listening to Billy Napier speak this morning from Florida, and just looking at the schedule, and just about every question that he got asked was about the schedule. It was about, hey, how do you attack this schedule if you're Billy Napier in Florida? How do you overcome it? How do you try to get to the expectations? I mean, the win total for Florida is like 4.5. That's the same as Arkansas. That's what Ty just told us a second ago. Like the fact that you have you have Florida and you have Arkansas at the same win total, it's just mind-boggling to think about that. But Billy Napier answered those questions in a really good way. He said, look, you take it one week at a time. He said, as cliche as it sounds, you take it one game at a time, because you can't win them all in the same week. So you may as well just focus on the one. And you know, I don't know if Florida's going to make it happen. I have my doubts, of course. Graham Mertz is a great quarterback, and his numbers are fantastic. But that Florida team, they need some help. And so let me pose the question to you, the listener, okay? Between Florida and Arkansas, with both of their preseason win totals being 4.5, which team is going to go over? All right, which team has a better chance of going over their projected win total of 4.5? Is it Arkansas or is it Florida? And I'm pulling up Florida's schedule again. I'm going to have them side by side, okay? Here's what Arkansas's got. They open up with UAPB, Pine Bluff. All right, they'll win that one, of course. At Oklahoma State, I don't think they win that. Home against UAB, won't be easy, but they should win it. At Auburn, they won't win that, so they'll be 2-2. A&M, neutral site, that game's always drunk. It's got weird things going on, but I don't think they win that one. You have Tennessee at home if you're Arkansas. I don't think they win that one. Okay, so now you only have two wins. You have LSU at home. I don't think you win that one. You're at Mississippi State. Maybe I'll give it to you just for the sake of the argument, okay? I've got Arkansas at three wins. You're not beating Ole Miss at home. You're not beating Texas at home. You'll beat Louisiana Tech, and you're not going to beat Missouri on the road to end the season on Saturday, November 30th. So that gives you what? 1, 2, 3, 4. I have Arkansas at 4. I have them going under 4.5 wins. If you want to gamble and say that they're going to beat, I don't know, who would it be? Tennessee, maybe, at home? I mean, or A&M neutral site, that'd be about the only ones that I could give them. And that would be them getting to 5 wins. Now, Florida, on the other hand, when their win total at 4.5, okay, I asked Billy Napier about this morning in the big room. I asked him about Miami, UCF, and Florida State. They play three teams from the state of Florida in that schedule. They open up with Miami, okay, that is in the swamp, that is in Gainesville, so that is big for Florida. They play Samford, Texas A&M to open up SEC play. That is in the Swamp. They play at Mississippi State. They host Central Florida, right? Gus Malzahn in Central Florida, now in the Big 12. Don't forget that. They host UCF in the middle of the season on October 5th for whatever reason. They go to Tennessee. They're home for Kentucky. They are playing Georgia, neutral side, as they always do in Jacksonville. They go on the road to Texas on November 9th. They also have LSU and Ole Miss at home before they go at Florida State. So let me go through and give you my predictions on these. I don't think they beat Miami. They will beat Samford, so there's one. I don't know if I give them the A&M win at home. I will, but I don't feel good about it. I'll say this. Florida's going to beat either Miami or Texas A&M, but they won't beat both. All right, so give them a win in one of those games, but not the other one. I think Florida can go on the road and beat Mississippi State. I really do. So there's two. You beat UCF at home. That's three. On the road at Tennessee, probably not. Home versus Kentucky, sure, that's four. Georgia, no. At Texas, no. LSU, no. Ole Miss, no. And Florida State, no. So, again, that is one game, two games, three games, four games. I've got them winning maybe four. One, two, three. Yeah. It's just crazy because the back end of that schedule is so difficult. Florida's going to have to pick up a win at home against LSU or a road win at Florida State to have a chance to go over their win total. And look, this team's not making a bowl game. If they beat Miami and they beat Texas A&M, then you're starting to talk about bowl eligibility because then you're 3-0, probably 4-0, probably 5-0 after you beat Mississippi State and Central Florida. 5-0 going to Tennessee, going to Knoxville. That'd be a lot of fun for Florida, but it'd be a miserable back half of that schedule. So my prediction is neither one of them, Florida or Arkansas, go over their 4.5 game win total predictions, which is, again, just wild to me. And I think you'll see both of those coaches get fired and let go. I really do. I think that's what's going to happen is Sam Pittman will be gone at Arkansas. Billy Napier will be gone at Florida. Two guys that I like a lot, I respect, and I think are good coaches, just guys that can't get it done at their current program. So lots more talk about this and a whole lot more about SEC football as we're live here at SEC Media Days. My one-on-one with Chris Doering from the SEC Network. We'll have that coming up for you next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Back here live at SEC Media Days 2024 on Radio Row in Dallas, Texas. I'm Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7 in Auburn and Opelika. And really, really looking forward to this conversation, sitting down with Chris Doering from SEC Network joining us here on ESPN 106.7. Great to have you back, my man.
Nice to be back with you as well. It's good to be here, man. This is always such a fun event and in new territory in Dallas, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, how is the – I know it's still early in the week, right? Yeah. It's day two and getting into the rest of the week of SEC Media Days, but what's it been like for you in Dallas so far?
Yeah, I think it's yesterday we went to that SEC story Saturday Night Lights,
which was really good. Awesome.
Did you go?
Yes,
yeah,
I did.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
That we left here at like 5:45. That was the first time I had stepped out of the hotel all day long. It's like being in Vegas, you know. So you're just confined indoors. Did 7 hours of shows yesterday, and in the midst of another long run today. But it's been fun, man. And I think, you know, there's a lot of anticipation. I talked to Commissioner Sankey yesterday. Mm-hmm. As much as people, you know, complaining about the transfer portal and NIL and the uncertainty with what's going on with Congress, like, I think this is like the most anticipated season in this league that I can remember in a long time. I think there's a lot of excitement about the playoff and what that's going to do to give more teams an opportunity in this league to compete for a national championship. And Texas and Oklahoma, man, it's awesome watching, you know, seeing those logos around and just projecting how they're going to do as they acclimate to the conference.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, with the anticipation for this season, there's so many factors because of that, not just Texas, Oklahoma, but you bring up the playoff. I mean, you've got so many talented quarterbacks around this league and coaches that are coming back, a couple that are you could consider on the hot seat, but it's just so many different things that get us ready for 2024.
I think the quarterback conversation is one of my favorite. You know, and every year we come here, you know, kind of waxes and wanes in terms of the experience level and the talent at that position.
Sure.
But this is one where, you know, you drop a Heisman Trophy favorite in Quinn Ewers to the conference, and you already got Carson Beck. The debate of, I've seen some people have Brady Cook higher than all those guys, or, you know, Connor Wegman projecting to be a first round pick potentially. It's just, we went with Jordan Rogers on our show this morning through his top eight. You know, Nico Iamaleava's left out of that list.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of notable quarterbacks that it goes pretty deep, and just excited to see what how things kind of shake out this year.
Do we have a Chris Doran quarterback ranking? Is that possible? Can we get at least a glimpse on what that could look like coming into
this
season?
Let's talk Heisman Trophy. Top quarterbacks and Heisman Trophies are kind of synonymous these days. So Carson Beck would probably be my number one. Quinn Ewers right there, number two. Really excited about, I wanted to kind of mix this in, that's why I said Heisman, but Luther Burden, man. I think Luther Burden is going to get, you know, he's gotten his due in the conference, but I think nationally people are going to figure out, they're going to take Missouri a little more seriously heading into this year after that 11-win season last year, and what he can do with the ball in his hands, whether you're talking about in the return game, as a receiver, handing it to him, he can do it all. So I'm excited about those three guys, and Jordan actually made a good point about Jackson Dart as well. What he's going to be asked to do in that offense, his ability to run to complement his passing ability. You know, he's a guy that I look forward to having a big year as well.
As we're talking quarterbacks, got to get your thoughts on Peyton Thorne down at Auburn, coming back in year two. Hugh Freeze in year two. A lot of expectations, but a lot of talent on the outside. A lot of new toys to play with down there on offense.
As you may remember, I was there for the spring game and had a chance to talk to Coach Freeze on Friday before the game. And just listening to kind of the confidence that he feels to have in Peyton Thorne and his reinsertion back into coaching the quarterbacks a little bit more and being involved in the play calling a little bit more. Like, it's so interesting to me that a guy that had kind of just made his way throughout the coaching ranks from calling ball plays and drawing up ball plays, removing himself like that, maybe you're your team's biggest asset. So to see him back involved is exciting. But I think one of the big points was surrounding, you know, Peyton Thorne with some talent. And I'd heard a lot about Cam Coleman before the spring game, and then getting to see him on the field, his physical development, his ball skills, watching the way that he can, you know, go get it and high point the football. Really excited about watching him as well. So I think, you know, between having Coach Freeze involved a little bit more and having a better group of talented receivers and shoring up that line a little bit, I think that they're going to be much better off offensively than last year.
Chris Doran joining us here on ESPN 106.7 in Auburn and Opelika here during On the Line on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. As we get into this season, you brought up the college football playoff a little bit earlier. It's an expanded playoff. You've got 12 teams now, and everybody's trying to figure out, okay, how many SEC teams can make the playoff, and what's the maximum number of teams from this conference that can make it? Because you start talking about Georgia and Texas and Ole Miss and even Alabama, right, and Missouri. Like, there's a lot of teams at LSU if they decide to do something, if Auburn has a magical season too. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities for Southeastern Conference teams.
We went through this exercise on our show this morning, and I started at six, and then I started to think, well, probably seven, maybe eight.
Is this a prediction or a possibility?
No, just of the teams that I thought were viable college football playoff participants.
Sure.
You know, I'd say probably eight deep. You know, one of the teams that I'm excited about that I haven't really heard a lot of people talking about is Tennessee. I think Tennessee, you know, with Nico Iamaleava getting a chance to play at the end of the year last year, watching him, I was at their pro day and got a chance to watch their first scrimmage. He's bigger than he was. The ball comes out very nice from his hands. I thought the timing with him and a really talented group of receivers looked a lot better than what we saw last year. I thought the receivers, you know, Joe Milton had his struggles, but the receivers didn't help him by any means. So I think, you know, that offense is going to be much better suited to run Josh Heupel's scheme next year. But I also think the defense will be better too. So I think every schedule in this league is tough, but I do think there are some that are a little more favorable. And I think Tennessee has a more favorable schedule with the majority of their difficult games outside of Georgia taking place in Neyland.
One of the things that's different this year, not just the location here of SEC Media Days, but and it's not even the absence of Nick Saban. He's just not wearing the Alabama pin on his suit. He's sitting with you guys on the TV
network. I just
TV
came
network.
From the green room with him, man. It's crazy to you know, normally, you know how it is when you're at Media Days, the entourage surrounding Coach Saban is large. He's just sitting in there. We're eating, you know, burritos and tacos and everything together. Just had a chance to talk to him about his golf game yesterday and all the opportunities to get together. out and play. It's kind of surreal, but it's really neat as well. And one of the most intimidating things that I can ever think to do in my life is talking ball with Coach Saban, and just how knowledgeable and experienced he is. Makes everybody feel kind of inferior when you're around. So it's a pleasure to get a chance to have some of his wisdom imparted on us.
Do you have any expectations for Kalen DeBoer in year one at Alabama? I mean, yeah. Alabama fans have expectations, but for somebody like you that's going to cover and talk about that team and program all year long, yeah. What are you feeling about Alabama this year?
I don't think that there was a better replacement. Like, you're talking about trying to do the you know, replace the irreplaceable, and I think, you know, as challenging as that was, they got the best guy that they could have. Kalen DeBoer has a proven track record everywhere he's been. You know, the way that he gets people to believe and buy in, the way that the offense, you know, has been so high flying and entertaining, it's going to attract a lot of talent. The guys that are on the roster are going to want to buy in. You're seeing the recruiting already. They're the number one recruiting class in 2025. So, you know, I think it's going to be exciting to see what he can kind of do and put his own fingerprint on it. But at the same time, I do think, you know, as we look at this year specifically, I don't think we ever really felt like the floor was anywhere below 10 games. Even if Coach Saban had a bad season, it was probably a 10-win season. I do think that, you know, we could look this year maybe at a 9-win season, maybe 8 potentially. So the floor may be a little lower. But I think over time, you're going to see them be able to get things rolling, and I'm excited to watch it.
Well, bottom line is there's still a lot of talent in Tuscaloosa.
Very much
and,
so.
And they brought in Kalen DeBoer, who almost won a national title.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to be
and got
okay.
Two guys drafted in the first 15 picks. I mean, you know,
yeah.
What a great advertisement it was. I'm sure the people in Auburn and Opelika don't want to talk about it, but you know, watching Kalen DeBoer's guys and Michael Penix Jr. and Roman Dunze get drafted early is just a great, you know, a great advertisement for why you want to come play offensive football for Kalen DeBoer in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, the people back in Auburn were hoping you had worse things to say about Alabama, but that's okay. We'll let that one slide. Well, before we let you go, Chris Doering, any bold predictions for this upcoming season? It could be about a player, yeah. A program, a team, anything you've got. What do you think is going to happen this year in 2020?
Well, let me talk about my alma mater real quick, because I think, you know, a lot of people are kind of sleeping on Florida. They have Florida 4.5 wins, I think, in Vegas.
Schedule so hard.
It's schedule difficult, it is, but I think one of the things I like about Coach Napier is that he's embraced that. And I think guys that want to compete want to play against the best. And I think it's, you know, sending that message out to your team as opposed to, yeah, it's going to be tough. You probably wouldn't want to expect much. Screw that, man. Let's go out there and play the best. Let's see how we are.
I
thought they did a great job of adding a lot of really experienced talent in the transfer portal. A lot of young guys forced into playing last year, and you could see the growing pains and the toll it took. But I do think that this is going to be a better team. Graham Mertz does not get the credit he deserves.
I agree with that.
I think he was outstanding last year, and I'm excited that he's coming back. So one bold prediction would be I have Florida winning at least 7 games,
okay.
Despite that tough schedule.
Yeah.
And I think you know, I think the other team in the old Eastern division, Tennessee, I got Tennessee winning 10 games this year.
Wow. So. Okay. I like it. Well, on the Florida track real quick, I mean, it's no secret that Napier, he's got to win, right? He's got to start winning. Do you think there's a certain number?
I don't think there's
a
number. No, I think it has to do more with aesthetics. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that was frustrating as a Florida guy was watching all the self-inflicted wounds, the penalties.
Right.
You know, two number threes on the field at the same time. Like, how do you have that happen? The execution at the end of the Arkansas game that looked like you had no idea what was going on. Undisciplined things. I want to see them play more cleanly. I want to see them play with a little bit more poise and discipline. I think that happens with the addition of some experienced guys and some young guys, you know, going through some of what they did last year. I think Florida will play with a much different level of sense of urgency and poise this year.
Chris Doering from SEC Network joining us here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 as we are coming at you from Radio Row in Dallas, Texas at SEC Football Media Days. Our coverage here all week long on ESPN 106.7 brought to you by our wonderful sponsors back in Auburn and Opelika, and we appreciate them making all of this possible. The Orthopedic Clinic, Plaza Bar and Lounge, Roots Real Estate, State Farm Insurance Agent Callie Bryan Chaddick, Wisdom Law Firm, and University Ace Hardware. Thank you to them for for allowing us to come to Dallas and for allowing us to bring all of this wonderful coverage to you. Hour number two each and every day here on ESPN for On the Line, brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. So be sure you check them out at theorthoclinic.com. And as we've done every day, I've gone on with Doug and cross-promoted and plugged my show coming up. And then Dan Peck has joined my show to plug and promote what's coming up on the drive.
You don't have to make it sound like such a chore. We're delighted to go on each other's shows.
We are. It's not a chore.
We're delighted to make these contractually obligated appearances on each other's on each other's shows this week.
Yeah, it was all part of a Steve Witten said, look, you can go to Dallas, but you have to be nice to other shows.
No, that's nice. We're handing the baton. You know, I think it's a reminder, we're all actually here in Dallas. We're all live and being able to jump on each other's
headsets. Well, that's what we have them thinking.
That's right. Don't say any current scores. Don't read the newspaper.
I can't tell you what the weather in Auburn is.
No, we don't know what the weather is on, but that's because we're in Dallas.
That's what I'm saying.
Where it is overcast. I will report if you're trying to fact check us. It's overcast. And today was, we thought that Texas Day would be sort of the jewel of this 4-day experience, and I think that's exactly what it turned into. I mean, there was not an empty seat in the small room when Steve Sarkisian went in, and there have been empty seats for a lot of high-profile people in the electronic media room this week, and yet when Steve Sarkisian went in there, it was spillover. It was a sellout, and so I think that shows, I mean, a lot of it has to do with the fact they were in the playoff last year. A lot of it has to do with the fact that they're bringing back maybe the biggest star in the conference in Quinn Ewers.
Sure.
But the excitement for Texas, it's Texas and Oklahoma, yes, but the excitement, I think, is predominantly around the fact that Texas could be coming in, and maybe they're coming in as the best team in the SEC immediately.
You know, and I'm broadcasting right between a couple of Texas dudes, a couple of stations, and they're excited. And as y'all might imagine, I took more of an Alabama spin this morning on the Max Roundtable, so I think our listeners, Jacob, are 7 hours that got their Alabama feel, and I'm excited about tomorrow for you guys bringing it home with Auburn.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Auburn Day tomorrow. Hugh Freeze talks in the afternoon. Believe he's on the main stage at 105, bringing Eugene Asante, Peyton Thorne, and Keldrick Falk with him, and really looking forward to hearing from those guys because they all have individual stories. You've got Peyton Thorne, returning quarterback, senior linebacker Eugene Asante, who is very outspoken, and then the rising sophomore, Keldrick Falk, really, really intrigued and looking forward to hearing from him as well.
Keldrick, a homegrown guy, a Highland home, not all that far away. Right. It don't matter. An outstanding little family restaurant there in Highland home. But it's very cool to have a guy like that and a story like that. You're right, Jacob. There are some great stories. I don't know how aware of those stories everybody at Media Days might be, because I think Auburn might be one of those teams flying a little bit under the radar. You were talking with Chris Doering in the previous segment. Florida is probably another one of those teams where I think the expectations are a little bit muted this year. We'll see if they can overachieve. But I think there are a couple of traditional powers in the SEC where I think people are in wait and see mode as to what they're going to get this year. I think that's fair to say. You know, Auburn's probably going to be picked, I would think, 10th or 11th tomorrow when we get the projections. I'd be surprised if it was a lot higher.
That'd be a mistake.
Where do you think Auburn should be?
I think Auburn has a great chance to be in the top half.
All right, how about this? Should Auburn be ahead of A&M in tomorrow's rankings?
I will put them above A&M in my rankings.
Here's why I will, because they play them in Auburn.
And it's late, too. That's in November.
Should Auburn be ahead of Kentucky in tomorrow's rankings?
They play them in Lexington.
They play them in Lexington.
I'm sorry. I tend to just compare rosters.
Yeah.
Auburn's roster is better than Kentucky's roster.
I would probably put Auburn ahead of Kentucky. I might be in wait-and-see mode on the A&M thing. Like, I think Auburn can win that game in Texas, but I also would understand
Are they playing at A&M?
No, Oklahoma and A&M are the big home games.
It's going to be really difficult for anybody to go in there. If Auburn doesn't have another New Mexico State, it's going to be really difficult for anybody to win in Auburn.
I would think once you get past Kentucky, A&M, Auburn in that little jumble, then you're talking about Tennessee, Oklahoma, and then you're working into teams that are probably going to be preseason top 15.
I put LSU in that group, too, with Tennessee and Oklahoma. I think LSU is better than people give them credit for.
I think LSU might be at the top of that group. I think people are going to have it. I think you're going to see LSU flirting with the top 10 in some of these preseason rankings.
I'm going to tell you guys, if OU can beat Tennessee, the week before they come to Auburn, that game's going to be in prime time. at Jordan-Hare Stadium, and OU's not going to know what in the living world hit them.
It's still, even if both teams are 4-0, it's probably not the game of the week because you also have Georgia and Tuscaloosa that day. But it's an excellent semi-main event. It's an excellent lead-up. If ESPN decides to go with Auburn, Oklahoma in the midday and Alabama, Georgia that night, that is an excellent back-to-back slate of
now
football
that you
games.
Mean, I think they've already picked Alabama, Georgia.
It's
for
the night game.
But you could have Auburn, Oklahoma playing leading up to that game.
As long as it's not 11 a.m., I don't care, Doug.
And if they're both if they're both 4-0, which they very well could be, we'll see what happens with Auburn against Cal and Arkansas. We'll see what happens with Oklahoma against Tennessee. But if they're both 4-0, that game is going to have juice. Real juice.
One question. I'm going to let y'all take it home. You see anybody else here doing 7 hours of this stuff?
Nope. Not anywhere close.
No. From morning to night.
I know people that have already left.
How about FM radio? Still bringing it.
I'm telling you what, man. We're 4 days to the end.
That's
for
right.
7 hours, 28 hours.
I was there for the first dude in the small room. I will be there for the last dude in the small room.
I've been told that you are a small room staple.
Fixture. Look, you know what? the way you get to ask questions for the really in demand people is you need to be there. When there's only two or three people in the crowd asking questions, the smaller
kids, they're always going to go to.
And a couple of, I think that gets back to Florida and Mississippi State. A couple of teams that went today, where you know, and you don't always see an overwhelming amount of Mississippi State media coming in, but there were a couple of programs where it was stark that no pun intended. It was stark that there really wasn't a ton of attention being paid to these players, which is unfortunate because these are guys working real hard, and I won't be surprised at all if Mississippi State's a little better than people think. Blake Shapen is one of the better transfer portal acquisitions anybody made this offseason. Dude threw 5,500 yards at Baylor, won a conference title, and now he's the quarterback at Mississippi State. I could see them being a lot better immediately.
Jacob, I've been to Starkville a lot. Are we saying that they have internet there now?
I have it on good authority. I know the SID, and his house has lovely copper wiring. Okay, so I can't stand for any.
You gotta have internet in Stark Vegas.
I know you knocked it out of the park today, Jacob. We expect Dan to do the same.
No Bill today. Bill is seeing Foreigner and Sticks in Atlanta tonight at the amphitheater.
Bill really is in his concert era.
Bill is in the concert era right now. May not fit Taylor Swift into the tour, but Bill Cameron is going to be seeing. He's seeing the Rolling Stones and Heart already this year. He's seeing Foreigner and Sticks tonight.
Tomorrow I'll get things rolling and let you guys bring it home with the Tigers tomorrow afternoon.
Awesome. Can't wait, Doug. Appreciate
Thanks so much,
it.
Doug. Appreciate
might,
you.
Might see you a little bit later on.
Yeah,
talk
I'll be,
Alabama.
I'll be here about 5.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk Alabama with Doug a little bit later on in the day.
Yeah, Doug Amos 11-2. Jacob with me on the line 2-4, and then Dan, he'll have it from 4-6 today. We'll have the final day coming up tomorrow. It is Auburn Day. Hugh Freeze and the players will be here tomorrow afternoon, and we're going to do our best to get them on the shows one way or the other. We'll see what we can do and hear what they have to say around SEC Media Days. Thank you all so much again for tuning in. You heard Doug say it. Nobody is doing it like we are. 7 straight hours of local sports talk radio and coverage from Radio Row at SEC Media Days. Dan's coming up for the drive. Who do you have with you in studio?
Let's go beat up Jake Crane real quick before our show.
Yeah, he needs it. He could use it. Okay. Yeah.
We got Rosie from WSFA.
Yeah.
Going to pop on in, talk some Alabama. John Sokolov covers Mississippi State. Doug Amos in the second hour. Jason Caldwell's in the studio.
Love it.
Should have Barrett Salee, Jordan Hill. A lot of cool stuff today.
Awesome. Stay tuned. The drive coming up, but I'll be back tomorrow for the final day, 2-4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, stay safe. I'll talk to you later.